Hello, my friends. I'm Bill McLaughlin. Welcome to St. Paul Sunday.
St. Paul Sunday is produced by Minnesota Public Radio and made possible by a major grant from the Minnesota-based General Mills Foundation, supporting excellence in education, human services, and the arts. Additional funding has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and by this Public Radio International station. Join us today with our guests, Opus One.
I'm Georgia Flizanis, sitting in for Bill McLaughlin. With me today are four remarkably versatile musicians and longtime friends who, despite very active and I think probably incredibly independent lives, managed to come together and have formed a new ensemble called Opus One. Welcome, Opus One.
Oh, thank you.
Great to be here.
Great to be here.
Those voices are violinist Ida Kavafian, violist Stephen Tannenbaum, cellist Peter Wiley, and pianist Anne-Marie McDermott. Since I had heard about your debut, which is now, I guess, 1998, mm-hmm. I had the thought right away that this Opus One represents a sort of chamber music love child born out of many, many performances and collaborations that many of you have had together over many years. Now, am I on the right track about that?
That's a great way to describe it.
Is it accurate?
It's absolutely accurate. Mm-hmm. I think we sort of started to think about forming a group when Peter and I left the Beaux-Arts Trio. We enjoyed playing together so much that we wanted to continue our collaboration, and Steve was a natural sort of outcome of that, of those talks. And then when the three of us started talking about it, we said, who's our very favorite pianist in the whole world?
Oh, thank you.
We said, Anne-Marie McDermott.
It was you, Anne-Marie.
We told her.
We kidnapped her and said, oh, by the way, you're going to be in our group.
Oh, you really had to pull my teeth on that.
Well, it's an absolutely lovely human collection of people, I can say, because I've worked with all of you, in fact, in chamber music, and I think when you've had a sort of one-on-one with musicians, you do start to feel a sense of chemistry, and chemistry is certainly what chamber music thrives on and lives on, and I certainly can only imagine wonderful concerts and performances coming out of the four of you. It's a wonderful thing to look forward to what you've brought for us today, and you've brought an incredibly wildly spirited program for us, starting with one of those barn-burning presto finales of Haydn's. This one from one of his piano trios in G major. It's actually marked Rondo al Ungarese, which sort of sounds like a veal scallopini dish to me, but it actually means a rondo on a Hungarian theme. However, in many cases where such a thing has been cited as Hungarian, these were really sort of gypsy tunes. Mm-hmm. And when composers who really were Hungarian came along and actually looked at these examples called Hungarian, they were actually pretty incensed because many of them really studied serious Hungarian music, and that's a very different thing from the sort of thing that we're going to hear in this Haydn trio. We're going to actually ask Steve, our violist, to remain mute through this, since it only involves piano, violin, and cello, and invite the three remaining members to render this wonderful rondo presto movement of Haydn's from his G major trio number 25. Thank you. Well, okay, that was definitely a barn that went down real fast. That was really, really just exactly what they hear in Prague every day, I'm sure. You've just heard the final movement from Haydn's piano trio in G major. It's his presto movement entitled Rondo al Ungarese, and on Hungarian, actually we know it's a gypsy theme. And you've heard members of Opus 1 who are with us here today, violinist Ida Kavafian, cellist Peter Wiley, and pianist Anne-Marie McDermott. Anne-Marie, that's just one of those sort of, you know, balletic kind of piano writings where you just are on the tips of your toes for the entire piece.
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those movements where I'll find in a performance that I don't swallow or breathe through the course of the movement.
You got to breathe.
You know, and you end the movement, and all of a sudden, you know, you go to stand up, and you, like, have tears coming down your face because you've got to swallow. So it's definitely... it keeps you on your toes, as you said. That's very well put.
It's brilliant writing, and
yeah,
it's remarkable, actually, this whole repertory of piano trios, just the sort of expectation of Haydn's to have this virtuosity in his players, and it's wonderful fun to play, and it certainly is great music to listen to and get our blood boiling. Well, I'm going to ask our violist, Stephen Tannenbaum, to come into the group now and move us into our next work, which is... in a way, another sort of deeply ethnic music from Bohemia. This is going to be the piano quartet of Dvořák's in E-flat major, and it's a work that kind of stands out as an original for him because he wrote certainly a lot of different chamber music kinds of groups, different collections, certainly a lot of string quartets. He'd like to add instruments to the string quartet, piano, double bass, and since you've all played a lot of, I'm sure, his chamber music, would anyone like to say anything about the piano quartet persona of Dvořák?
I think it's a work that is beloved by so many people. I mean, it's one of our favorite pieces to play. It's great fun. We're always exploring new ways to do it, and we're always having discussions. I know we've had endless discussions about the very first bar. We've spent hours talking about the character and all of that, but it is a piece that we all love to play. It's fun and great music.
Well, I was going to actually ask the first, it's wonderful to actually hear musicians talk about things that get to them in terms of their interpretation. And I wonder if you could actually play us the first bar of this opening movement, because I think that for us to understand what it is to come to a decision about how to render four notes, which is what you're talking about. They're four
exactly
little notes that move one to the next, but they create, I mean, the movement is entitled Allegro con fuoco, I believe, and it's...
That was one of the discussions, actually. Allegro con fuoco, and we were talking about, was fuoco really a tempo or a character, and so we had discussions about the tempo, how fast we should go. I should tell you, Georgia, that... Mm-hmm. In this group,
the men are on one side
of the beat, and the women are on the other.
Definitely.
And it's predictable.
It is.
When we have these discussions that Steve and Peter are, they try to put the reins on the two of us, and sometimes it works.
And so the end result is something in between. Possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah, and I think
Possibly.
It works well because, you know, it's given our temperaments and stuff, Peter and I might wallow a little bit too much, and these girls kind of keep us on edge, and we sort of calm them down, throw a little water on their
Sounds like a good marriage.
It is.
Sounds
fires.
Like a good marriage to me. Sounds
yeah.
like a good ingredient.
It is.
It's mm-hmm. always a thrill to end up, you know, a little bit ahead of one of the women in this group.
every
6 months or so, you get a little ahead of them. You just feel like you really done something.
Well, let's hear what happens today when we actually hear the opening bars of this theme and see exactly what we're going to have when we hear it all the way through. So we're actually going to hear the first opening bars of this wonderful Dvořák piano quartet and see what the interpretation feels like for the moment so that our listeners can get a sense of where the piece sits. And this is actually the opening bars of the work. There was no piano, so it really involves the string players having their say and the sonority of the strings establishing a certain kind of fire and temperament in the piece. The end of the piece of this first movement also has a wonderful effect, and I wonder if you could also play that for us before we play the entire movement. And it's where he brings back this very same little scene that you played, but with tremolo, and it's right mm-hmm. right toward the very end. Techniques that composers use to create mystery and conclusion. This work has this wonderful ability to start from joy, to have many different chapters of itself. This theme you'll hear in many different sorts of moods and styles. It's an absolutely wonderful piece, as you said, Ida, and wonderful fun to sit back and listen to, and we are looking forward to that right now. This is going to be the first movement of Dvorak's Piano Quartet in E-flat major, opus 87. It's marked Allegro con fuoco. This is opus 1.
Thank you.
Thank you. What an absolutely glorious first movement of a work. I mean, we've just heard the Dvorak Piano Quartet in E-flat major, the opening movement, Allegro con fuoco, played for us with such heart and soul, and that element of flavor that one wants to have. We should get frequent flyer points. It's like going somewhere very far away and being with these people. You've heard Opus One, this wonderful group that's come together. Its members, Ida Kavafian violin, Stephen Tannenbaum on viola, and Peter Wiley cello, and Anne-Marie McDermott on piano. It is this kind of potpourri of not only just a magnitude of structure that he gives us to wade into, a big frame, a large frame. This is a big piece, you can feel from the beginning. But then the episodes that he takes you through just have such endearments and troubledness. Having just played out the first moment alone like that, what does it make you feel like?
I'm feeling like there's so much there. It's almost a complete work in itself. I mean, the range of emotion and the dynamic range. I mean, the piano cadenza practically in the middle of the movement is so... unlike anything else.
Where the piano plays by itself.
Yeah, and it's just so free, and then we have these moments of isolation and moments of grandeur, and it has some of everything, a little bit of everything.
You know that one
even
spot...
Even a viola solo.
Even a viola solo, too. I know, several. There's that one spot, Peter, where you play this...
That's the cello solo. Yeah.
I've got to hear that again. I'm sorry.
I love that part, too.
It's the most intimate.
It's, you know, when we think that life is very short, I think when we have moments like this, it's important to have them again.
Let's do it.
Just so that we can appreciate it, and when people hear the piece again, they have... another sort of contact point, wherever you feel comfortable leading into that.
All righty.
Thank you.
that made my day. Thank you very much.
And of course, the way he plays it is so beautiful.
Yeah.
But he stays on that same pitch for so long. And then when you go to the next...
Yeah, the change.
The little change.
Up a little higher.
It gets you even more.
Yeah.
You know what I find fascinating about everything, though, not to get too esoteric about it, but I think there's like a shared experience we get to do in that, for me personally, I feel like when I'm playing music, I'm in somebody's head, you know, the composer, the guy who had the original concept of these ideas, and that maybe I get to touch a little emotion that he felt at that time that he tried to create on paper and that we get to share, and hopefully a listener gets to cry or laugh or whatever that's all about. And it sort of transcends, languages and international boundaries and all that stuff. And I feel like after we do play this Czech music sometimes that we get to feel the flavor of what that lifestyle was about without even having experienced it ourselves.
Definitely.
Well, and I think the transporting, when I said frequent flyer miles, mm-hmm. I really sort of mean that there is this feeling with, especially in the hands of such wonderful artists, there is an ability for you to take the listener so confidently into the work and into who you are. I mean, that's the wonderful thing that gets displayed always to me. And the longer I'm in music myself and in my own process of becoming... more searching in every work that I play, I find that that's the thing that's most even more profound. What's happening is just the way the artist becomes more and more present and complete, and therefore the composer has, of course, so much to value from that. So it is a wonderful synthesis, and I appreciate what you're giving us today. Well, I'd like to bring us into focus after all this wonderful discussion about transportation out of reality, and say that we have been listening to Opus 1, violinist Ida Kavafian, violist Stephen Tenenbaum, cellist Peter Wiley, Anne McDermott, piano, and I am Georgia Flizanis, sitting in for Bill McLaughlin, and you've been listening to St. Paul Sunday. For those of you who'd like to find more information out about Opus 1 or any of the musicians that you hear on St. Paul Sunday, you should check into our website. It's there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's an absolutely wonderful information source. The address is stpaulsunday.org. I encourage you to take that extra step and find out more. So the address again is stpaulsunday.org. So let us go to our final work on the program, a work by the American composer Stephen Hartke. Its title is The King of the Sun, and the six movements that we're going to hear are actually based on paintings by the Spanish painter Miró. And beyond this, I think that as we listen to this work, we will find ourselves going into some absolutely fantastical sound worlds. And Hartke seems to have a real keen sense of how to do this. And I'm wondering if you might comment a little bit on some of those techniques that he will bring to life these absolutely bizarre movements that we're about to hear.
Well, I sort of feel that Hartke has a knack of combining old styles with new visions on them. You know, the piece has atmospheres that are going to be very unusual, yet some of the techniques he uses are very old, such as the early music influence.
Almost,
in it?
I think he's very influenced by medieval music. You'll hear that in the third movement, the last movement especially.
Right. And these, as you say, these colors, these soundscapes per se, inspired by maybe the titles of the paintings, but really the piece had a beginning with a conception from an old canon that had an interesting story. The title of the piece is actually the title of the canon. Unfortunately, it's a mistranslation of an old French title that was given to this canon. The actual translation should be Sunshine, Le Roi du Soleil, and it ended up in the word King of the Sun, and the canon then was also misattributed to this composer named Cicconia. And it wasn't written by him, and so it kind of brings out Stephen Hartke's tremendous sense of humor, too. He uses the canon throughout the piece as a melodic thread to take us through from movement to movement. But I think the most important thing is that this piece has this combination of great energy in it and humor and beautiful atmosphere to it, so that when you listen to it, you're transported.
This great imagination of the language of music just sounds that I think are not heard in any other kind of music.
Well, I think that's maybe something worth listening to very briefly, just to give us a sense of stacking these different sounds, and each of you has an independent sound that you're going to contribute to this texture. And I think textures in music, of course, are always, you're not supposed to necessarily know how each thing is happening, but when you hear the texture, you hear a composite or a result that is absolutely another thing. It isn't the sound of any individual player, but it is those things added together. So maybe we could just hear that little snippet of the canon, which has the violin doing something bowing near the bridge.
I'm supposed to be playing sul ponticello, which means to bow put the bow hair by the bridge, which makes a very glassy sound.
And the viola is
playing pizzicato, which means plucking the string, and I'm also supposed to play very close to the bridge.
Second of our components, and then the third component is?
I am doing colegno battuto, which means hitting the string with the wood of the bow as opposed to the hair of the bow, and also sul ponticello close to the bridge.
And that sounds like? And when we put this all together, we get? And therein lies the creative inspiration, doesn't it?
The mistranslated, misattributed canon that doesn't work.
That doesn't work, but that has absolutely everything going for it once it's moving along in time and space. Well, it sounds like a work that has almost too much in it to even cover on a three-hour show, let alone the time we have now. I think the best thing we can do is just to simply have you roll the carpet out and present us with this, what sounds like an amazing magnum opus by Mr. Hartke, Stephen Hartke, of The King of the Sun. And this is Opus 1.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, this is quite a journey. Thank you. I mean, wonderful, wonderful work. This was a work by Stephen Hartke, The King of the Sun, played so magnificently. I'm just sort of speechless and spellbound. It's like being in the presence of an amazing film director, but somebody who's directing sound. I mean, just somebody whose imagination is boundless. It's like, it really is one of those experiences of hearing a voice that's so original.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so absolutely confident of the instrumental powers that he's working with.
Definitely.
And you just are at his whim to take you into the most bizarre places.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That Gothic cathedral movement with the organ is just mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is scary music.
Yes.
It's frightening music. I mean, it's absolutely like having been in a cold place with this bizarrely huge instrument just wailing away and mm-hmm. feeling absolutely just in awe of it mm-hmm. and stunned by its enormity. The scope of this piece is, I can see why you're just...
I'm so glad you feel that way about it, too. As we said, we're so excited to play it, and we're so excited that we talked Stephen Hartke into writing a new piece for us, which he is going to do, and instead of the normal piano quartet combination, he's going to write it for two violas, cello and piano, since I play viola.
Well, we will look forward to that, because I find that this is music I want to hear a lot more of, and I'm sure that those of us who are hearing his music for the first time are going to remember this name, Stephen Hartke, and thank you so much for the selling of this piece. And I think that's when a person hears a piece for the first time, you want to feel like it's been lived in, and you certainly have that feeling. I hope we'll hear this from you. I hope you'll record it. I hope we'll hear a lot more. We've had a wonderful program today. Thank you for bringing the Haydn Trio, which seems like a long time ago, but was just a wonderful sort of firecracker to start the program off, and this wonderful Dvorak movement from the piano quartet, and of course the Stephen Hartke work. It's just been such a pleasure and thrill to sit and listen to you all play again, and I thank you tremendously for coming out of your busy lives here to give us this program.
It was our pleasure to be here, Georgia.
Thank you for making it so easy for us.
And if you'd like to write us with your reactions and thoughts to the music and the performers today, please do so at our email address, which is sunday@mpr.org. I'm Georgia Flizanis. Bill McLaughlin will be back next week, when I hope you'll tune in again for St. Paul Sunday.
St. Paul Sunday is made possible by a major grant from the Minnesota-based General Mills Foundation, supporting excellence in education, human services, and the arts. Additional funding has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and by this Public Radio International station. St. Paul Sunday is produced by Minnesota Public Radio in the Maud Moon Weyerhaeuser Music Studio. Your host for this series is Bill McLaughlin. Today's guest host is Georgia Flizanis. The senior producer is Mary Lee. The music producer is Steve Barnett. And the associate producer is Vaughn Ormseth. The engineer is Tom Mudge, and the production engineer is Michael DeMarc. The St. Paul Sunday website is produced by Nancy Blakestead. This is Marianne Sullivan.
You're listening to music of Manuel de Falla as performed by Kim Kashkashian, one of the selections on St. Paul Sunday's newest compact disc, Mixed Company. Visit our website at stpaulsunday.org to order your copy of Mixed Company, music from St. Paul Sunday. This recording includes performances of Gil Shaham, the Emerson String Quartet, and many more, all recorded for this program and many not available elsewhere. And don't forget, your purchase of this recording helps support your station and St. Paul Sunday. Order your copy of Mixed Company from the St. Paul Sunday website, stpaulsunday.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.